Okay, we're picking up a Menzayan Amud Aleph for two lines from the top. The Gemara is discussing, continuing we discussed yesterday, Basis Hudavar Asar, that something is a base for Mukta, it's going to be Mukta. The Gemara is going to discuss a similar inyan over here. The Gemara says, Amar Bezir, Amar Basi, Amar Biochan, and Amar Bezir, Amar Chani, Amar Romnus. Is the name Romnus now? Liyutir Rebbe, Lehatil Machta Be'afra. Rebbe permitted me to move this type of coal pan with its leftover ashes. Now we're assuming over here that Rav Romnus understood that these ashes are mukta because a person didn't expect to be using them on Shabbos and therefore they're not allowed to be moved. And apparently he held, Rashi points this out, that he held like Rabbi Yehuda, therefore that's something you need explicit da'as. You need to have in mind clearly that you're going to be using it. If not, it's going to be mukta. So have a Rebbe permitted for me to move this with its leftover ashes. So the Gemara asks, though, Amar Le Rabbi Zeir Le Rabbi Asi. Rabbi Asi asked on this, though. Mi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Achi, but Rabbi Yochanan really say this, Vatnan. But we learned in the Mishnah, No Tal Demino, Vavin Biyado. A person could take his son in his arms, even though the son is holding a stone in his hand. So the Gemara is going to ask over there, but why is this mutter? He's taking the child, and the child has mukta, so the Gemara is going to be mokim that we're talking about that the Chazal are makel over here because the child really wants the father and he's going to get sick if he's not able to have the father. Okay, we'll discuss when we get to the Gemara over there, but that's an aga point. But the Gemara says, "Ol kagel evin betocha." Here's the important part for us: the basket where there's a stone inside of it. And now on that, so in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan said that we're dealing specifically with a case that the basket had fruit in it and not. And the stone also, but if it also had fruit in it, then you're allowed to move the basket because it has fruit and the stone in it, and the mukta item is more valuable. The Ramban points this out. The mukta value is going to be more valuable than the non-mukta item, and therefore it's mutter to move it together. So the Gemara says, Taima de Isbe Peri. Rabbi Yochanan was only makel because there was fruit in the basket. Halis le peri lo, but if there was no fruit in the basket, it would be considered a basas davar aser. So then how could Rabbi Yochanan himself say that Rebbe permitted to move this coal pan that is filled with mukta? Shouldn't it be a basas davar aser? Shouldn't it be a base for something that's aser? And it should be mukta and aser to move it. So the Gemara now says, Ishtamim kishachada. So Rabbi Asi was like astonished for a few moments over here when he's figuring out what to do. And the Gemara, this is a pasuk in the quote on the side, the Torah Orah from Daniel. So they say, Ve'amar hachanami de'izbei kartin. So he answered, he ended up saying that we're dealing with a case where this coal pan is containing some leftover bits of unburned incense over here that still smells nice. And therefore it's not considered mukta because it has that unburned part of it still has a purpose on Shabbos because it smells good. So the Gemara says, though Amar Abaye Kartin Bei Rebbe Michashive, but this leftover incense is going to be somewhat significant to Rebbe. Rebbe was very rich. We know Rebbe and Antoninus, I think it was someone who they weren't missing a tznun even in any month of the year. They were very, very chashuv. The Gemara quoted this earlier. So Rebbe was very wealthy. So if you wouldn't, he never used this leftover incense, even though it smelled nicely. So it still should be mukta because he never thought about using this leftover incense. So the Gemara says maybe v'chite mechazul name, but who, so you'll say it doesn't matter. It's not a subjective thing. It's objective that there are some people, poor people, would use this leftover incense because it smells good, even though Rebbe himself would not. So the Gemara wants to compare it now to the following. That's not true. That's not the Gedder over here. It is an objective thing. It depends on the person. Big de'aniyim laniyim, when you see that clothing fit for poor people in terms of tumah v'tahara, what's the minimum shear? We dealt with this a little bit earlier also. What's considered the minimum shear for minimum size of a beged, of a clothing that can be susceptible to tumah? If it's less than that, it's not even considered a cloth that's susceptible to tumah and it would not become tumah. So we are assuming that a poor person is different than a rich person, right? The poor person was 3x3 at tzbos, 3x3 finger breadth, as opposed to a rich person is going to be 3x3 tfachim, 3x3 hand breadth, much bigger. So the Gemara now says, though, the Braisa tells us, though, big de aniyim laniyim, that when we're sizing it up, that the clothing for the poor people is defined by the poor people themselves, and big de ashirim lashirim, and wealthy people, it's going to be defined by wealthy people. So the Gemara is making a deal now. Haval, de aniyim lashirim lo. But clothing that's fit for a poor person, if the wealthy person has it right now, and he doesn't plan on using it, so for him, it's not going to be susceptible to tumah. So we see that we go after the individual person's and the individual person's status when it comes to tumah v'tahara. So too over here when it comes to muksa, we should go to the individual person's status. So the Gemara now rejects Rav Asi, and Abaye comes up with a different answer. Ela Amar Abaye, Midi Avya Graf Shel Rei. Abaye wants to compare this to a case of like a vessel that they use to put one's excrement, the things that smelled very bad, and Chazal permitted one to move it because it smells very bad and it's very discomforting to have it there, and therefore you are allowed to move it. You're bothered. So too, Rebbe was bothered by these leftover ashes. He didn't like the sight of the leftover ashes, so therefore he's allowed to move it. So the Gemara asks, Rava rejects this also. Amar Rava, state shuvas bedavar. There's two reasons to reject your comparison. Chad the graf shel rei ma'is alamez. First of all, what? You didn't like seeing it with the leftover ashes? Because it still smelled nice. So here's nothing to do with it. It's not disgusting at all. When it comes to the graf shel rei, it has a person's excrement that obviously smells awful. A person doesn't want anywhere near his house, he's going to take it out and bring it to the garbage. However, over here, it doesn't smell, it smells nice. So you didn't like the look of your antenna that everybody's like, that's not enough to say that's mukta. Ve'od, graf shel rei, miglavai mikasi. Even further though, the excrement is open, so it really smells awful, and this was covered. So if you want to say that it smells the most pleasant smell, it was covered. So it should, another reason to assume that it shouldn't be mukta. So therefore, Rava comes on to a different explanation. He rejects Abaye, Elamar Rava. Given him a Rachman when I was by Rav Nachman, he told us the following, he would tell us that you're allowed to move a coal pan, or I saw him doing it, he actually saw this happening, he saw him move a coal pan because of the need for the ashes. And Rashi points out, the ashes were not mukta, so therefore the ashes were considered more chashuv, even when they're broken pieces of wood that were mukta, since it had the non-mukta items over here, therefore when Rebbe permitted Rav Romas to move it, it's a similar situation where the ashes were not mukta. And that's the answer over here, that the ashes had a purpose. There is a purpose, a person could use them for it to cover things, and there is a purpose for ashes on Shabbos, and therefore it's not considered mukta. So the Gemara asks, Kasha the Mesive, we have a Kasha this, based on the following, Bishavin, both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, with regards to mukta, agree, She'im yesh bashivre psila, that if the lamp has remnants of a wick, Shasu Latalta, it's forbidden to move the lamp because it is now considered a basis of davar aser for the remnants of the lamp. So the Gemara asks though, but it has oil, and the oil seemingly is more chashuv than the wick, so why can't you say you can move it because of the oil? So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, this Mishnah was Bugli Lashanu. It was taught in the bright, it was taught dafka for the people in the Galil, in the upper north of Eretz Yisrael, because Rashi says that they used flax to manufacture wicks, which was very scarce. So for them, it was more chashiv to have the wicks because they used it to make to manufacture the flax, which they didn't have a lot of. So it was more chashiv than the oil. That's one shot. I saw Rav Nissim Gaon as an interesting shot. He has a different shot, but here he says that the Galil, they were just amaratzim a lot, and they didn't know any halacha. So a lot of times, Chazal to make extra gzeros for them and be more machmir with them with anyone else. So therefore, they assumed that it would be problematic. But anyway, we see over here, it's a very important halacha though that comes out, that when a person has a basis ladav, if there's something that's more chashiv, if there's something on the base, it's on that base, it's more chashiv, then we would be allowed to move it. So this comes up a lot. If people have a candelabra with a tray on the bottom, or just candlesticks with a tray on the bottom, are they allowed to move the tray? So the tray is a bus, is ladavar aser, because the lamp, we know, is aser, because migo deskai, the banish mash is yom yoma, you can't even move it, tzorach kufa, tzorach mukomo. So if a person wants to move it off his table, either later that night or the next morning, he's not really allowed to, because it's mukta. And even if you want to use that area, it would also be mukta. So the Mishnah points out that this is permitted as long as you put, sorry, it would not be permitted unless you do the following. You put an object that would be more significant on it. So if a person puts like a fancy gold ring or something that's more chashiv than the candlesticks, depending how nice his candlesticks are, so again, it has to be more chashiv, then it would be permitted to move it. Otherwise, it would be prohibited to move it. If you put it on your table, it would be usher to move the candlesticks with the base. It would be usher to take the base and move the candlesticks once Shabbos arrives. That's what comes out from this Gemara over here when it comes to buses, davar usher, davar hamutter, that the davar hamutter needs to be more significant than the davar ha-usher. So that's important halachas. Now, we finished discussing Hilchos Muktzah. Pnei Yeshua discussed, what does this next sugya have anything to do with what we mentioned? So the Pnei Yeshua says that since we were discussing moving a lamp, whether it's Muktzah or not, and that was also talking about a lamp can be assembled and this is and reassembled, so therefore we're discussing over here now the halachas of Boneh, the halachas of building on Shabbos. The Gemara now says, Levi Bar Shmuel Ashkenazi Rabbi Abba Rav Huna Bar Chiya, Rabbi Bar Abba saw, Rabbi Shmuel saw Rabbi Chiya Bar Rav Huna, and he said, Tavu Kamei Apitzcha Devei Rav Huna. Sorry, they were standing by Rav Huna's doorstep. Amalu, he said to them, what's the halacha with someone who wants to reassemble some sort of a, Rashi is two pshatim over here, either it's a coppersmith's bed or it's some sort of a weaver's bed, something like that, on Shabbos. So it was something that had the different parts that they would take apart and put them back together. So the Gemara says, Amar Lei, Shapir Dami, it's totally mutter to put it back together and put it apart on Shabbos. So it wouldn't be an Isser. Also the commentary of Yehuda, and they came before of Yehuda, Amar, Ha, Rav, Shmuel, but you, this is no, that the halacha is complete. Obviously, it's Rav and Shmuel, both say, Machzir, Matim, Shil, Chutzim, Shabbos, Chayv, Chata. Someone who does this, you reassemble whatever it is, either the coppersmith's bed, or the Tupshat and Rasha, either the coppersmith's bed, or the weaver's bed, is Usser, Isser, Da, Raisa. So Rashi points out what Isser Daraisa is there. So you would have thought that this is talking about being bona, doing bona. And that's the pashas of the sugya. That's how the Ramban actually explains, but there's a big problem because the Gemara in Beitza seems to say Beis Hillel doesn't hold of Binyan Mekalim. Here we're talking about a Kli. So how could it be? Okay, so therefore Rashi says that we're not discussing Binyan Mekalim. Rashi says we're assuming we're discussing Makeh Bepatish, that when a person finishes a job, he finishes an Avalacha, that's considered Makeh Bepatish. That's the Isser Daraisa that's being discussed over here. Either way, you're violating an Isser Daraisa Machlokas, these two Rishonim, that also has shita like that with the Ramban, but the Maisa, you're just you're violating Isser Daraisa according to Rav and Shmuel. And just to point out, we don't usually often that one Amora says something is totally mutter to do on Shabbos, and then the other Amora says that this is an Isser Daraisa, not just that it's Isser Daraisa, it's Isser Daraisa to do that. Tosfos Mem Zayin Beis asked this kasha, so just give the answer there because it's discussed over here. They say therefore that when we were discussing the case over here, you have to assume that they would agree that fundamentally maybe it's not an Isser Daraisa in this case. We're talking about, they would say that theoretically if a person was doing it in a situation where it got really extremely permanent, and he did it really in a situation where he did it really tightly, that would be the Isser Daraisa. So therefore, you should be gozer even in a situation where it's considered loose, and therefore this case was talking about where it was loose, and it's only been Isser Darabanan on this very Shaila, but he was saying that theoretically the case exists where it's an Isser Daraisa. I just think it's important to point that out for the understanding of the Sukkah. Okay, either way, Gemara now says though, Meisive, we have a Kasha Rabbi Abba Behuna Ruchia that we asked based on the following Raisa, Machzer Kana Menorah B'Shabbos Chayv Chata, someone is reaffixing a branch on a candelabra on Shabbos, he's going to be chayev. He's an Isser Daraisa. Kana siyadin lo yachzer. And when it comes to some sort of plaster's pole, which it was made up of section, Rashi points out, and then if they want to adjust it for the size, they would do that often. So therefore, you're doing it in a tight manner, but it's not something that's permanent because you change it all the time, so you shouldn't do it. However, if a person does this, it's not a deraisa, but derabanan goes around it because obviously a person could come to make the mistake and do it tightly in a permanent fashion, which would be an Isser Daraisa. So therefore, even if you're doing it tightly in a non-permanent fashion, that it's going to be done only one time, that would be an Isser Daraisa. Rav Simai Omer, Karana Gula Chayav. Rav Simai says that if someone's doing a round horn, he's going to be Chayav, Isser Daraisa, Karam Shuta, Patur, because however, a straight horn is going to be Patur. What's the difference? Because the round horn, those are inserted, Rashi points out. They're very tight, and also it's done by Se'uma, and it's done by someone who's a professional has to do it, so therefore, that's then of Makeh B'Patish, that would be, you're creating the Kli. However, when it comes to the straight one, that's very loose, and they're also made to be inserted and removed constantly, Rashi points out, so therefore, that would only be an Isser Darabanan. But what do we see from here, though? We see that the Brice is telling us that someone is going to be Chayav for reaffixing the branch of the candelabra, which would be comparable to our case of the coppersmith's bed, so therefore shouldn't that be usher according to the Shita? The Gemara says, you're right, that was only according to this Tana. However, the Gemara picks out, the Gemara says, inadamar katani. Really, that Rabbah, Rabbah, Rav Chia, they hold like a different price, so you're right, but it's a machlokas Tanaim about it, and they hold like a different Tana. Who do they hold like? The Sanya, they hold in the following price, Malbanos Amita, Chasamita, Levachim Shal Stavitsky. So what are these three things? The Malbanos Amita are this type of bread, a bed frame. That's like where they would put the wooden frame through which one of the ropes of the bed would be interlaced. That's the first thing. Kriyas Amita is the legs of the bed. And then you have Levachim Shal Sakibas is this archer's table, which refers to part of the bow, which they would like pull the arrow back, and it would be detached from the bed and move it back onto the bow. So if a person does that, then you're not allowed to do that. Lo yachzer, for all these things, you're not allowed to reattach them on Shabbos. However, mechzir, if you did do that, patar of alasar, it is going to be going to the next time. Right now, it's going to be din derabanan, isser derabanan. So the Gemara says, "Veloi takav." You shouldn't do them. You shouldn't nail them in. V'im takav chayv chatas. If you nailed them in and did it in a permanent fashion, that would be an Isser Daraisa. However, Rabban Shimon Begamliel Omer. This is where he was the Tana that Rav Chia was holding. Like that, he holds. If the attachment was only loose, then it's going to be permitted to attach it as long as one doesn't nail it in. So Rabbi Aaron Bar Chia is holding, like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that's what we see over here, he's holding that the copper's bed is loose, and therefore, he's following Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that holds that it's totally mutter to do it on Shabbos. So now the Gemara says, Beirav Chama Havi Mita Galalnisa. So Rav Chama, they had some sort of a like foldable, collapsible bed. Havi Mahajer Be'yomatova, they would put it, reassemble it on Yom Tov. However, so Gemara asked, Amar Lei, Omid Rabbanu LaRava, they asked Rav about this. They said, why did Rav Chama do this? By Daisach, what is your reason permitting it? Binyan minatzaru. It sounds like this is an indirect manner, atypical manner of assembling something. You're right that that's considered not in Hidr, Isser Daisach. That's not the normal fashion. So something that's not done in the normal fashion is considered an Isser Darabanan. Correct. However, not an Isser Darais. However, Isser Darabanan Miyayika. It's going to be an Isser Darais. It's going to be an Isser Darabanan to do it. Meaning to build something in a non-normal fashion is going to be still an Isser Darabanan. So why did they do this? So Amar Lehi responded to them. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Surili to Amar Mirafa Mutra. Responded that they held like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, and he held that if it is only loose, it's going to be mutter, and therefore it was okay that they did it like that. So how do we pass in the Shulchan Aruch? That's actually how we pass in like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So a person should know that there's three levels. If something is permanent and he does it tightly, that's an Isser Daraisa Bona Bekelim on Shabbos. That again, maybe not Mr. Binyan, maybe it's an Isser Makapatis, whatever it is, it is a Daraisa. That's what comes out. If someone does something in a permanent manner, but in a tight manner, but it's not permanent, that would be that it's hiduk, but it's rough, but it's a hiduk, but it's not permanent. Then it's going to be an Isser Darabanan. However, if something is just loose, then that is going to be, it's going to be mutter to do it, to add it in loosely, and that again, this has a lot of ramifications, lachlamaisa, for certain things, and Ramah just adds in though, that the sections of the utensils, they have to be actually designed to fit together loosely. If something is generally done in a very permanent fashion, but you just want to do it loosely, the Ramah says that that would also be usher and isser derabanan. So again, this has a lot of, let's say for example, let's say the broom on the brush falls out of the bottom part, you'll have to put it back in on Shabbos, that's a big shayla. If you assume it's a loose thing, and it's not really done like that, that'd be mutter. If not, be usher again, I think that's a shy in the post game. I think definitely there are those remains. So you'd have to ask Rishut Rabba at that. But again, these all come up from the sugi over here. When it comes to Binyan Mikalim, all these shilas come up. Okay, so this is now the last Mishnah in the Parak. We actually made reference to this Mishnah before. On Mem Beis, we mentioned it before. So the Gemara asks, when it comes to Mukta, the Gemara says now, Nosnik li tachas ner lekabel nitzotzos. So someone is allowed to place a vessel under a lamp in order to catch the falling sparks. Either before Shabbos or on Shabbos, you're allowed to put it there. And then the Mishnah continues, you shouldn't put water in this vessel because you would then be doing the Isser of extinguishing on Shabbos. You would be causing the sparks to be extinguished on Shabbos. And the Gemara is going to discuss exactly what the parameters of that is. So says the Gemara now. But why is this permitted at all to put the vessel under the lamp in order to catch the sparks? Why is that mutter? Aren't you nullifying the use of the kli over here? We know that nullifying the use of the kli is part of the Isser of Mukta, that it's creating, you're ruining the kli. It's doma that we saw different reasonings for why mevatel kli mechana. Maybe it's also, it's like, we saw that was one shot, another shot, maybe it's like soser, it's like you're ruining, destroying the kli, or you're making it muksa because you're establishing that's the place it is and you can't move it anymore. But either way, mevatel kli mechana we saw is a problem. So isn't that an issue over here? So the Gemara says, Amarvuna Berita of Yeshua, that sparks have no substance, and we saw before also, I think it was Das Rashi, Madaik Rashi, that therefore you can move it even when the sparks are falling there because the sparks have no substance at all and won't be allowed to move it. So that's what Gemara says. Now the Gemara is analyzing the second part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, someone is not allowed to place water in the kli over there, the vessel, because if he does that, he's going to be doing kibbutz, he's going to be extinguishing the sparks. So the Gemara says, Lema tznan stomach Rabbi Yosi. Maybe our stam Mishnah over here is following the sheet of Rabbi Yosi. Da'amar gorim lekibbutz aser. So just to give a background over here, that the Mishnah, later on, the Mishnah Kufchaf Manalev says that on Shabbos, someone is allowed to prevent the fire from spreading by lining up a lot of kalim together, a lot of vessels, with water on them also, even the Tanakhama says. And however, Rabbi Yosi says that this is aser to do it if it's going to be klecheres, if they're going to be klecheres that are filled with water because the heat of the fire is going to cause it to burst, and therefore the water is going to then put out the fire. So that's called gram kiboy, that indirectly causing the fire, and that Rabbi Yossi says is usher. And the Gemara there is going to be saying that's only, even the Tanakhama is only make a hesed mama when you're losing a financial loss. Rabbi Yossi says even financial loss is going to be usher to do gorin le kiboy, to do gram kiboy. So the Gemara now says maybe this Mishnah is assuming that gram kiboy because it's indirectly putting out the fire, putting out the fire of the candelabra over here, that would be usher. So the Gemara says no, but Tisbra, you think that's reasonable? Imur Rabbi Yossi, when should Rabbi Yossi say that this is usher? That's only on Shabbos itself, b'Shabbos. However, b'er Shabbos miyamar. Our Mishnah was assumed by the Gemara as Davar Pashat is talking about before Shabbos also that you're not allowed to put the water there, to put the bowl filled with water. So if that's true, then Rabbi Yossi wouldn't say that that's usher. So it has nothing to do with the Shittas Rabbi Yossi. So the Gemara says maybe that Mechitema Achanami b'Shabbos, maybe you should say that our Mishnah is only speaking about Shabbos itself. That's how there's an explicit brisa that says, Nosin Kli Tachas Nir Lekal B'Netzotos b'Shabbos v'Insar Chlomar b'er Shabbos. They're explicit, the Bryce says, that a person cannot place the water in the vessel because he's extinguishing the sparks, even on Erev Shabbos, and obviously it goes without saying that Shabbos itself is Aser. So, but the Braisa says explicitly that on Erev Shabbos is also Aser. And we wanted to say B'dash Rabbi Yossi that only on Shabbos it's going to be Aser. Only Erev Shabbos it shouldn't be Aser. So this has nothing to do with the Machlokas of Gram Kippur. Therefore, the Gemara comes to a different explanation. The Gemara says, Rav Ashi, Afilo Tamer Rabbanan. Now this Mishnah follows even the Sheet of Rabbanan, who are going to Rabbi Yossi when it comes to indirectly putting out the fire over there with Gram Kippur. Shani Acha, this case is different Mishnah, Mikar of his Kippur. Because everyone agrees that you're directly extinguishing the sparks. How is that? Rashi says that that when it comes to this case over here, that when you put the water over there under the Nair, that is in a chanami on Erev Shabbos is no Isser, because you're only causing it on Erev Shabbos, and that's mutter because you didn't do any malacha. However, where goes there that, because if you did it on Shabbos itself, that Rashi says is mamish the Isser of Kippur, because it's not just considered indirect enough, rather it's considered directly enough to assume that that's mamish Kippur, not indirect, and therefore it's going to be Usser in Isser deraisa. So therefore we make a gzira that even on Erev Shabbos it's going to be Usser, and even the Rabbanim would agree to this gzira because it's not indirect, it's going to be direct if one did it on Shabbos. Okay, Adkan, we finished the parak. Hadron alach kira, hadron alach kira, hadron alach kira. Now going on to the next parak, just to give two words of introduction, that there are two, hatmana. This parak is really basically all deals with hatmana and a hemshech of mukta, because once we're discussing things are now allowed to move, we're going to discuss more things in mukta. But just when it comes to hatmana, we saw already a reference to this, that it's insulating on Shabbos. So insulating on Shabbos has two basic halachas. The first halacha is that before Shabbos, someone is allowed to insulate with anything that's keeping the heat. However, something that adds to the heat is going to be usher. And then on Shabbos itself, it's usher to do hatmana with anything. To even insulate it with something that's keeping the heat is also going to be usher. So why are these cases? So on Shabbos itself, it's usher because we're afraid someone is going to find the food that's totally cold and he's just going to come to reheat it in an isser fashion, in an isser deraisa fashion of cooking it. That was the first chash. However, the second chash of why on Erev Shabbos is it usher bedavar mosif hevel. So we saw reference to this in Gemara Lamed Daled already. The Gemara told us that insulating before Shabbos with materials that add heat is going to be a problem because someone is going to then come to insulate with something that wasn't garfakatim, someone that didn't have coals that were properly covered or removed before Shabbos, and then that's going to lead shamei chatav gechalim. Someone's going to come to stove the coals. Those are therefore that's the gzira over there. So when it comes to the first Mishnah, we're discussing things that it's usher to insulate with on Shabbos because these substances add heat to the food, which would be usher even before Shabbos. So that's what we're going to hear over here. That's what the Mishnah themselves. So this says the Mishnah. B'mev tomin ma'im tomin. What is someone allowed to insulate with? And what is one not allowed to insulate with? Meaning someone is removing a pot from the stove on Erev Shabbos and he wants to preserve its heat. What could he use to insulate it, that pot? So says the Mishnah. Ein tomin lo v'gefes, v'lo v'zeva, v'malach, v'lo v'sid, v'chol v'chol. Someone is not allowed to insulate with, a person's not allowed to insulate with this type of solid residue that's produced of the oil, right? Okay, that's the first thing. Or in the manure, or with salt, or with lime, or with sand, whether it is dry, whether it is wet. It just scientifically, I just saw over here that what happens over here when these substances in the Mishnah come together, they apparently add a chemical reaction which will add heat. I know the Matthias over here, but that's apparently the Matthias, that when these solid residue of grapes or sesame or manure, when they come together, they undergo some sort of fermentation which would generate heat, and that would create a problem of being adding heat on doing insulation with something that's adding heat. So therefore, it's usher even Erev Shabbos, even before Shabbos. So says the Mishnah, v'lo b'teven, v'lo b'zagin, v'lo b'mochin, v'lo b'asavin, b'manchin lachin, not with straw or with grape skins or this other type of soft material as cotton, or with this grass while they are moist, but one is allowed to insulate them while they are dry, because when they are dry, they are not considered to be adding any heat whatsoever. So says the Gemara now, in analyzing the first ruling of the Mishnah, they're wondering the following halacha. When it comes to this olive residue that we discussed, is that dafka? Because there's a lot of heat to that, or maybe consume, and therefore when it comes to the residue of the sesame, which is less intense, maybe it's going to be mutter to insulate with this sesame. Or maybe the Mishnah is referring to even this residue of sesame, and then olives, it's going to be certainly usher. So then, which residue exactly are we discussing with when it comes to I mentioned already that the Mishnah is oil, but that was because the Gemara discussed it, but the Maisa Gemara is a question whether it's referring to oil or sesame. The Gemara says Tashma. We learn a proof from the following. Damar Rabbi Zera Mashum Chad Debe Rabbi Yana. They said in the name of the base medrash of Rabbi Yana, Kupa Shetaman Ba'aso Nechal Gefesh El Zisim. A box which someone insulated with hot food, it's forbidden to place on top of that box, on top of the olive, the olive residue over here. So again, when it comes to Hatmana over here, we're assuming Rabbi Zera is teaching us that where the food that's placed in the box containing the insulation, that it doesn't add heat, and that box is placed on top of food that does add heat, like the olive over here, this olive residue, then it's going to be considered Hatmana B'davar Mosifelva, it's going to be considered as insulating something that is adding heat, and therefore it's going to be Usr. So the Gemara is saying over here, he says it's Usr. So we say over here, the Gemara wants to bring a Raya. So again, we can bring a proof from here that Mishnah is referring to dafka of olives and not of sesame. The Gemara says, where do you get the Raya from? I will tell you that when it regards to actual insulation, that it's going to be Usr to use the sesame residue also. However, with regards to havela, then when it comes to the heat rising, then I'm going to tell you that heating food that is not actually insulated in it, but causing it to rise with olives, that causes the heat to rise. Therefore, it's going to be usur even to place cooked food upon it. However, with regards to residue of sesame, that doesn't cause any food to be heated, and therefore to rise, meaning that much. Therefore, it's going to be mutter with regards to sesame. So, just to point out, halacha l'maisa, the Ran points out that even though the Gemara doesn't have an explicit conclusion over here, it's going to be usur to insulate with regards to sesame. But however, people are insulating with sesame things. However, that since the Gemara explicitly said that placing it on top of the cooked food is mutter, so that everyone agrees will be mutter. Okay, adkan for today.